This is Songwriter's Room, and I'm your host, Tomoko. Today's guest is Billy Nunn. Billy Nunn is originally from Buffalo, New York, currently resides in Las Vegas. He is one of the great masters of the Hammond B3 organ, 2015 Buffalo Music Hall of Fame inductee, and a songwriter with many Billboard hit songs. He co-wrote with Philip Bailey, Mary Jane Girls All Night Long, his brother Bobby Nunn, She's Just a Groupie, and Rick James' Mary Jane. He worked with many other giants and toured all over the world, such as the legendary harmonica virtuoso Sugar Blue, Johnny Lytle, Marvin Brown from the Delphonics, The Miracles, The Platters, Gap Band, George Benson, and more. Later in part two, Billy will break down the song Mary Jane and show us how he wrote it with Rick James. That's gonna be some fun. So can I get a whoop whoop?
Yep.
So ladies and gents, please welcome Billy Nunn.
Thank you, I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
How you doing, Billy? Good to see you.
Oh, good to be seen.
So first off, Billy, can you give us a little quick 15 seconds live performance so that the audience can get a little taste, please? All right, thank you so much. So you were an organ player first back in Buffalo, New York, right?
Right, yeah.
And you are a beast playing that organ. Audience may not know exactly what it is. What's the difference and how difficult it is to play?
Well, organ different from piano because primarily you got to play the bass yourself. Mm-hmm. Either with the left hand and with the pedals. And piano players have to have a bass player, so different in that respect. Plus, the touch of the keys are a lot different, too. A lot easier on organ. You know, if you play an acoustic, you end up with those arms like Popeye, you know, because it takes a lot of strength to
right.
play acoustic piano, you know.
So how did you get started?
Well, actually, a neighbor friend of my mom's, Edith Ingram, she loaned my mother a Jimmy Smith album called Bashin', and it had Walk on the Wild Side on it. I just listened to it, and something clicked. The high school I went to, there was a gentleman a year ahead of me named Jimmy Davis, and by coincidence, he played organ. So during the summer vacation of junior to senior year for me, on Saturdays, I go by his house. And, you know, he'd show me a few things, which really helped. And then I also listened to a lot of records. Jimmy Smith, Jack McDuff, Groove Holmes, Larry Young, Don Patterson. So, you know, I'd listen to them, and I'd be sitting at the piano trying to pick stuff out.
Okay. You wrote Mary Jane with the one and only Rick James. How did that come about?
I had been living in Baltimore, and I just came back from Japan with the group The Soft Tones and The Miracles. And went back to Buffalo, got introduced. My brother had met Rick through a young lady, Vanessa Brooks. And he had just came back from Canada and was looking for musicians to help him with some songs. So we just started hanging every day and jamming. But he had said he had a song he had started called Mary Jane and needed some help. Mm-hmm. I told him, you know, I'd do the music and finish it up for him. He had basically the lyrics, so that's how it came about. He came up with the melody. I came up with, like, string parts, the chord changes, the bridge, the fruit parts, clavinet.
Nice. Yeah. Hello, but funky song.
Oh, yeah, it's a blessing type song, you know, because it's like 42 years old. You still hear it. You know, it makes me proud to have been involved.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I remember on BET Awards when he said on the stage, I'm Rick James, bitch.
Oh, yeah. He did Fire and Desire with Tina.
Right, it was hilarious.
I mean, Chappelle coming up with the whole skit,
exactly.
That was like a second win for him. It became like the hottest catchphrase
Exactly. Rick was doing a lot of drugs and stuff. So you've been hanging around with him and Tina Marie and all this time. How crazy was those times?
They were pretty crazy. It was basically, you know, late 70s, early 80s. I was living in L.A. then. A lot of weed, a lot of cocaine, a lot of alcohol was floating around the city. And
what about you? What are you doing?
Kind of, you know, did a little bit. I did co-write Mary Jane. Not about a girl, and it's not about the candy.
What are the memorable moments that you remember most with him?
Well, during that summer of 77, when we were getting songs together, we basically hung out every day, and then at night we go to the clubs, listen to the music, party. I was with him before the hoopla started. and so I kind of had a different side than most people, you know. Once the hoopla started, you know, he kind of changed a little bit, which people do, you know. We had a lot of fun together. And then didn't see each other for a long time, and then finally did hook back up, because he'd come to Vegas, you know, and I'd go to the shows and stuff, and we'd sit and talk, go out after the show, have a couple of drinks, and
Okay, what are the challenges?
Well, you know, the money. You know, the money comes in quick and abundance, and you get that fame thing going on, everybody loves you, you know, you can't do no wrong. You start believing your press releases, then that's when you start getting in, you know, a little bit of trouble. When you're making a lot, you got to spend a lot sometimes. You got to kind of prepare for the future, because nobody stays on top forever.
Right.
So we all got vices of some type. Best just try to keep them under control.
So did you get a paper written right about the song Mary J. with him, and then you still get some royalties?
That's another show. In fact, I mean, while I'm on here, I've been trying to get in touch with an entertainment lawyer who can kind of help me, because in all actuality, on the copyright, my name isn't on there, and I was supposed to get money from him under the table. It never took place. I don't know. Mary Jane was kind of like a shock type of thing. You and I came out first, and first single, and went gold, and then Mary Jane was the second single. None of us thought it was going to do what it did. You know, you figure if you trust somebody and your friend, they'll do what they say they were going to do, which never took place. So,
did he tell you that he's going
to? Well, around the time when we, you know, were writing it, and when we finished it, recorded it, and it came out, I'll kick you down. But then, like I said, the hoopla come in sometime and change everything. You know, I had to get a lawyer. You know, was trying to sue him at one point. And I mean, like now, I've been in touch with BMI. He's on ASCAP, and BMI has a thing called revised work, where if you can present some type of a documentation that you had something to do with the song, you can have the work revised where your name shows up on the copyright. So,
and but still, I would think it's harder because he's dead now.
Actually, the end of last year, corresponding with BMI's legal team, then I got in touch with ASCAP. But the last word I heard from BMI was that I probably would need a lawyer. They couldn't give me any legal advice, naturally. But the whole thing is, I was just trying to find out what type of documentation I would need. They never responded. So I went on the site and basically read, you know, what they said. At this time, I'm ready to present two or three of the other guys that played on it, rehearsed on it with me, and have them do either video depositions or written depositions, and, you know, notarize and co-sign, telling BMI to get in touch with ASCAP, because I did it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm looking for an entertainment lawyer, somebody out there that maybe want to take the case pro bono. It's an interesting case. I mean, the song is 40-something years old. It's made millions.
Yeah, I hope you get some, because, you know, it's unfortunate these things happen all the time. Especially when you start collaborating together without talking about the money first.
Right. Yeah. Since back then, you know, we didn't have the old cut and paste, that type of thing. You had to literally play the stuff and write it, actually. No chord changes, know how to play. Now you just cut and paste some stuff, stick it in there, and wrote it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I have to also ask you about your talented brother, Bobby Nunn. Mm-hmm. I love his song, The Party's Over, from 1982 on Motown.
Oh, yeah.
You guys collaborated on many songs, including the big hit, The Jets, Rocket to You, that won the Grammy for the best vocal duo or group.
They were nominated.
Nominated, okay. So that was a big hit. Can you tell us about that experience? You were talking about your Bobby recorded their vocals.
Well, yeah, he was the producer and the songwriter. Uh-huh. And my brother also plays keys. So, you know, we went in there and knocked it out. But he did all the vocals. So when the Jets came in, the only thing that happened was their lead singer doubled the lead track with my brother. Because on the lead vocal, that's my brother also and all the background. So all he did was sing along the lead track with my brother.
Wow. Kind of
like, you know, yeah, we were like, if they won, it would have been like another Milli Vanilli type. You know, so.
Can they really sing, or they have no talent, or what do they do when they do live?
Well, some people can't really cut it in the studio. When you're on stage and the music's going and, you know, you're close to the key, nobody really knows it, but when you're in a studio recording, everything has to be precise. You know, I mean, it's been going on for years. You know, if you couldn't get the job done, they'd bring somebody in there who could. And for years, like I said, until Milli Vanilli, a lot of people weren't even aware somebody else was singing. Like the Weather Girls, everybody dance now. And in the video, they had this other chick, pantomiming, but it was one of the Weather Girls. I think she ended up suing them. You know, it's a shame you got to go through drastic measures to get paid for something that you do.
That's true. But
it's not even about singing on an artist. I mean, you got the auto-tuned, you got all kind of tricks to make you sound good. Back in the day, you had to have that raw talent.
Exactly. Yeah.
We had so many singers and bands and musicians back when we were coming up that we were learning from. That'll never happen again on the face of the earth. Because, I mean, the dynamite singers who passed, Ronnie Dice and David Peets, and some of these youngsters ain't got a clue.
I heard that vocalists like James Ingram always did it in one take.
Oh, we had so many talented guys.
Jeffrey Osborne,
when he left, I mean, you know, dynamite singer, naturally Luther. And it's crazy. We still got a few, Phil Perry.
Right. But these days, younger idols, they don't even sing at the live. They just play.
Oh, no. Back then, even a lot of bands, they weren't singers. They were musicians who stay in key. They got people that be singing, like we say. Most of the musicians, like myself, actually, can stay in key. That'll get you over. I mean, back then, that's what a lot of groups are doing. You know.
Okay, great. So let's get to the part two.
I hope you enjoyed part one. Please continue to watch part two about songwriting as well. And don't forget to click subscribe and hit the bell to get notified about new videos of Songwriter's Room, my new music, or Japan News series. Arigato!